Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
Who knows what lies in the hearts of small horses? Who dares to dream of a completed tagline? The Weirdington knows.
That's it. The title for this week is The.
It's just The.
Yes.
The Weirdington.
Yes. And I'm coming to you from live from underneath a blanket currently. because I don't have my audio setup done quite right perfectly right now. So, because I'm moving rooms. So, I'm trying to diffuse the echo that we've got going on. It should hopefully counter most of the problem I'm having. I think it's mostly I'm just hearing my own echo. But we will see in the post-production stuff. So, you know, is what it
Meanwhile,
is.
Meanwhile, I have the incredibly high-tech and advanced audio setup of in a garage.
Yes. Where there is a constant sound of breaking and smashing and vehicles driving by off in the distance.
Highly professional.
Yes, we are a very, very professional podcast. Underneath a blanket and in a garage. So I guess we should actually get started on this one. I'm not looking forward to it. That's for sure.
Oh, fuck.
But yeah, first.
You know what? I am armored. I am calloused. By being dead inside, I am completely
yeah.
On the
that
plus
seems to
side.
Be the only way to like to solve it. Like just as a like a preview of this one before Weird gets into their introduction. This was definitely the chapter on my first reading through. I just completely gave up. Like this was just man, I'm done. I don't care anymore. And I was just like. More or less along for the ride. Like, I think I've said that multiple times before in this, but, like, this is really the moment that really, like, a lot of goodwill I had for the story, even on my first reading, when, like, I was, at the time, kind of looking through it with rosy-colored glasses. I was pretty burnt by this one. I even considered skipping this one this week, like, just because it's just because of the way it is. But I realized that this particular chapter is, like, it's the bleeding heart on which the entirety of Project Horizons was written around. Like, this entirety of scene and chapter exists. Like, the whole story exists to facilitate arc happening. Before we get into that, though, Weird, you should tell us what we learned last week.
No. I'm afraid I can't do that, Vi. I will tell you how last week's episode ended, but last week was a seminal episode in our podcast history. I'm going to have to update my Twitter, which has a link to the previous most seminal episode, which was Bullshit Mountain, wherein we found out Ultra Guy is so much better a kisser than Superman, and the Queen Whiskey episode was the last one that I thought was our pinnacle. We reached new heights of low. We've dug too gridly and too deep on the podcast. Suffice it to say, there's two. Yeah, no, my brain breaks. Like I sort of rehearse this to myself. I've already spent more time building up to talking about it than I ever will actually saying it. It was bad. So on the one hand, what Somber wanted us to see was our hero at the very height of their life, everything going right and well, suddenly snatched down and dragged low by being possessed by the goddess to go kill little Pip.
Kill the Lightbringer.
But what we actually saw, like the narrator told us one thing and showed us another, which was a lot of really deep, horrible horseshit, concluding in the most emotionally troubling rape in the story so far. In a story that has really tried to, like, be the boy who cried wolf of fictional rapes, who really just leans on rape as sort of cheap heel heat, had our protagonist perform one of the most disturbing rape scenes in all fiction that I have ever, like, consumed, confirming that, hey, ladies, if you ever find yourself an opportunity to be alone in a room with Sauber, don't.
Yeah, just don't.
Don't drink anything he offers you. Don't have a friend nearby. And if that friend has to leave for any reason, you find a reason to follow them. But yeah, Blackjack once again rapes 21, and then this happens, and then we go once again. We follow that immediately up with, all right, we're interacting with the story that this is supposed to be a repudiation of again. And last week was so bad, and the premise that we were presented with as the teaser for this episode was also so bad that I'm gonna be shocked if I'm emotionally affected. I have my expectations could not be lower.
Oh, I don't expect you to be emotionally affected by this. I expect you to just be, like, done and tired, the way I am about this story from this. But I guess I should launch into it. Chapter 58, Departures. I titled this one, You're Doing It Wrong, Give Me the Controller episode. though I probably should have said you're writing it wrong, but it's basically the same energy. BJ is ruminating on gravity this whole chapter for some dumb reason. It's the big theme of this particular chapter of, like, inevitable aspects of a person's character, and also being used as a metaphor to describe, like, the experience of things, of people being clustered together by one's, like, charisma gravity. It's all very stupid. It doesn't mean anything, really. It's Sombra is really given up on, like, actually taking, like, as a given that, like, their audience is intelligent and would be capable of understanding a metaphor. You know, Garth Marenghi, like, I know artists who use subtext and they're all cowards. But it's all very stupid. Fuck, this chapter is such a chaotic mess. First and foremost, PJ and Lacuna, who are, like, you know, having been taken completely hostage by the goddess, like, all other volition has been removed. They have to do this. They can't stop. They get teleported to Miramare first, which is the, like, military base that, like, we've gone to, like, four times at this point, I think, because we need to get some loot that we didn't get before. And there's a bunch of scavengers there, and this is to, like... So we're already starting off really poorly. There's a scene in which BJ is really, like, violent to a bunch of scavengers and kind of, like, murders them pretty violently. And there's a ridiculous line that comes from Lacuna about this, yelling at the goddess because the goddess is making her do this, that she says, don't do this to her, don't turn her into her antithesis, which, like that's all right, move away from the mic.
It took me a moment to really hit me how funny this is. Like, I was spoiled on that line, like, yesterday.
Thursdays have become this kind of, like, me live-tweeting on the Discord a night about the chapter coming up.
And Fi posted this, and I assumed that this would have, like, come at sort of the pivotal moment where Blackjack is staring down a sniper rifle at a real hero, And that this would come at, like, my god, you're like, she's only ever, like, killed, like, in the heat of battle and self-defense, you're going to really turn her into an executioner, and moreover, an executioner of somebody who has done no wrong! But, like, this is her Tuesday. Like, this yes. is like you're puppeting her to do something she does fucking like every week. Like,
she does
every day of the week before breakfast.
This is the kind of thing that is so inconsequential in the story at this point. This is the thing that Blackjack does in mid-transit. Like as she's going to a new location, she'll pop off a couple of raiders or scavengers or whatever. But that line.
Like, we had a line of dialogue a while back. Like, I will never forget the time in the story when, like, BJ was lamenting that no one was firing at. Like, that, like, she saw, like, another group passing by and, like, was, like, wishing that they would, like, pull iron on her so that she could kill them and let off some steam with a few, like, mid-afternoon murders, you know, just to
work out some stress. It's actually, like, genuinely incredible how wrong Somber is about his own characters. Like, this is a really important, like, I really want to talk about this particular line because it really stuck out to me. But also just, like, to in general talk about how bad the writing specifically is in this chapter. Like the writing is always kind of, like, muddy and pretty, like, you know, generic in a lot of scenes. Very utilitarian. The writing is so much weaker in this chapter alone, primarily because, like it's trying to be so, like, metaphorical and symbolic with a bunch of its, like, writing and trying to, like, tap into deeper themes that, like, are not present in the story. Like this line is amazing. Like, it's just the just presenting, like, oh, you don't want to turn your main character into, like, the bad guy. It's like, Blackjack is the bad guy, though. Like, that's kind of the problem. Like, she's already a pretty unrepentant killer. But,
and monarchist, and recently a rapist of the First Order.
What do you mean, like, again? Like, yeah. Again. This isn't the first time.
Well, I mean, like, she's a high-end rapist. No mere, like, assault somebody in alley. No, this is, like...
Well, I mean, she did rape.
Was, like, exploit somebody's deepest psychological trauma.
I mean, she also did rape 21 before. Like,
yeah,
that did happen. As a kid. But even still.
But we're supposed to think that she's grown beyond that.
I mean, but we know she hasn't because no one ever grows. But yeah, I just really wanted to, like, stick out and talk about that line, because that line is, like, a good sort of typeface for, like, everything else that's going on wrong with the writing of this chapter. Is it's so melodramatic and so, like, obnoxious.
Yeah, we like, besides everything that we have just talked about, there's also, like, the sheer prose structure, like, the no, don't turn her into her antithesis.
Yeah, it's way more
not don't robotic. Make her a monster, not, like,
or an executioner, which is the buzzword that it uses all the time,
or anything but this, or, like, but you couldn't get it. It'd be hard to make the language more awkward.
It's so weirdly unnatural. It's a really stick out scene. But yeah, she fucks up some scavengers. We keep going back to the same row of dumb marauders lockers that have been locked by magic bullshit that no one can pick through. So they all required, like, identification codes, and they finally get to Psalms one, which, because, you know, Psalm is part of Unity, BJ now has access to her, like, codes and just opens up her locker that has been locked
this
whole
time. Why would
she
need them? Doesn't she have, like, isn't the core MacGuffin of the entire fucking story a skeleton key?
Well, I mean, like, it doesn't work like that, I guess. I mean, the skeleton key only matters when to unlock the projects anyways. It doesn't do anything else.
The fucking... Maltese.exe gets lamer there, he said.
Well, I mean, it's just a matter of just, like, it. Well, I mean, it's a video game, right? It's she tried the locker, and then the little prompt that comes up in Fallout that says, like, this is locked and there's no lockpick skill associated with it, so she can't unlock it because that's just how the video game works. And the MacGuffin doesn't work on that because it's not scripted to. Because it's a very rigid video game. It's a lot of, like, video game parody is a lot of what's happening in this series, this game, like this story all the time. But yeah, she gets a really dumb OP anti-material rifle called Penance, because it's SOM, so of course it's called Penance. And BJ gets cool new armor, the way it's described. Like, there's a really silly scene in which she puts it on, and because, like, there's the other Alicorns are here now, they just, like, magic tailor the suit around her to, like, so it fits her properly, which is just a really weird detail to even put in at all. But, like, the ridiculous fan service of the scene really sticks out to me, because the way it's described. Yes.
I'm overwhelmed with the batshit insane visual image of BJ's surrounded on all sides by unicorns whose like horns glow, their horns and eyes glow. They begin enchanting Om, and like a sort of weird dark inversion of a Sailor Moon transformation sequence, and like. Happens is the armor is unspooled and tailored around her.
That's pretty good, yeah. But yeah, the ridiculous fan servicey moment sticks out to me in this, in that the armor is very obviously NCR Ranger SWAT armor from Fallout New Vegas. So she just looks like the guy on the cover of New Vegas. But yeah, she looks like the ridiculous. Like ponified version of like the cover of New Vegas, which just really sticks out in my mind because A, it's really stupid, but also just reminds me of the ridiculous like meme trend that went around for a long time of just like taking popular character and turning them into a pony and it looking like absolute dog shit because like they just made like a horrible vector flash version of a like popular character. In a pony
shape.
Yeah,
trench coat doesn't have quite the same appeal on a quadruped.
I can make it work, but, like, I'm an artist who specializes in, like, making pony clothing look good. But, like, you have to tailor it around the fact that they're a quadruped and not just be, like... Whatever, we're talking about art, like, visual things on a non-visual...
It's also funnier imagining the NCA... that costume, that ranger costume... With, like, insect forelimbs sticking out of it.
I think they're hidden, which is dumber.
Okay. Alright.
It's really, sure. Which is just, like, really lame. Just, like...
It just pops out when the skin is selected, sure.
Yeah, whatever. No, they clip really horribly because the meshes aren't done right.
Canon. Alright.
Yes.
So what happens next?
We spent
a good amount of time on the.
I don't want to talk about this chapter, so I'm finding everything to like. The other thing I want to talk about is I want to bring.
Oh, how the tables have turned! Ooh, how the tables have turned!
So,
now it is I who provoke you.
So, anyways, I guess yeah, I'll get moseying. But anyways, the thing I want to bring up every time that the goddess ever comes up in the story is Somber is really pissy about how he writes the goddess, because every time the goddess is on screen, she's so much lamer than she is in the canon material. There is a ridiculously petty line in this where like, cause you know, cause this whole scene, like I'm going to be skipping around this really fast because the story does, but BJ and Lacuna just get teleported. They just use a bunch of fast travel like zips to get all the way out of the hoof and back into the Equestrian Heartland, which is the main canon story. So don't worry about how they're getting there. They're just zipping. But there's a line in it where like the goddess is like, you know, in BJ's mind, she can hear Unity now, which is just like the collective cacophony of all of the voices of the goddess. And she's like, you know, she talks about like this big, the big rambling chaotic mess. And she just goes, meh, I've seen worse.
Really? Have you?
And like,
have you?
Well, like the thing is that like, this is meant to sound like a tough guy. Like, oh, you're not so shit, elder god creature. You know, I stared at the abyss. And because this is a character that a different writer invented, this is so clearly a snipe about the goddess and trying to be like, well, my universe is so much more interesting. And like, because, you know, BJ went into the orb dimension and also like the horrible chorus of talking flesh and all that stuff. It's all to prop up the idea that like BJ is like experienced weirder eldritch horrors, which vicariously is a weird like chide against the main story by the author. Like, this is all just fucking axe grinding. This entire chapter is axe grinding about the main story.
I'm not, yeah, and I am thoroughly unconvinced.
Yeah, I'm
this is wildly unearned.
Yeah, no, it's super unearned. We'll get into a part that I'm going to get really frustrated with later on, but there's a ridiculously lame scene where Lacuna, like, tries to, like, exert some will against the goddess, further proving that, like, the thing that Weird wants out of Lacuna is never going to happen in canon material, because even when she kind of tries to be like, well, I'm my own person, like, I have validity, I have an identity, the goddess is like, lol, no, you don't count, you're not real, and I can just unravel you at any time, because, like, this story feels like it's just sniping at us directly.
Sombra can eat my entire ass.
Yeah.
Because in doing so, there's probably been some like person with half a brain who's like pointed out the same stuff we have while
he's
in the middle of writing it. And like, hey, Sombra, you stupid asshole. You're the entire premise of this character is that she's stuffed full of emotions that like you don't want any of your thralls feeling. And so she is like a reservoir of rebellion.
Yeah.
That should count for something. And if it doesn't, it means that you've lied to the audience, which means you're a hack. You stupid, worthless hack. Way to own yourself.
There's a line I got really frustrated here, too, where, like, because, like, like a lot of this is just the BJ being just like, but the goddess, like, it's just how it comes across. There's a ridiculous line, though, where she's like, because she's like, oh, the black, like, she can, because she can hear Unity's thoughts now, and, like, she knows that the reason why the goddess hasn't converted BJ is because she wants an additional, like, she wants a trump card because she's worried that, like, Little Pip has something on her, because Little Pip does, like, she's, this is the whole thing, Little Pip is going to show down the goddess, it's the end of Fallout 1 basically happening, and she wants to know what, like, ace up her sleeve she has, and she wants a trump card, and there's a ridiculous line coming from it going, wow, all this power and majesty and you still need a trump card like me? That seems pretty weak for a goddess. And it's like, Somber, you made this character up. This isn't, like, Blackjack isn't real. They're not a real character that appears in the original story. Did you forget that? Did you forget that this line that you're making says way more about your own story than it says in the original? Because you invented this person for this fucking point. Like, you don't...
Your character isn't always Shadow the Horde Hag. Like you've gone super far out of your way to like Frodo is such a weak small loser. My character is Frodon, and he is a man, and he's 8 feet tall and ate the Ring of Power
and absorbed all its power.
And suplexed a Balrog. So, like, yeah, it's really dissonant that, like...
It's really weird. Like, it's a weird moment to be, like it, going, well, it's kind of lame that this character is so lame. And it's like, Sombra, you invented this character to make the character lamer. It's... like, it's such a bizarre... It is very weird to be like, look how lame this is. And it's like, Somber, you invented a straw man to make your case weird, like, dumber. Like, it's super weird. It's a really weird point to make. I guess because, like, Somber has, like, he is just now, like, completely huffing his own farts and thinks that, like, the story is his now. Because the only way I can understand how you can make these kind of, like, ridiculous snipey lines and think that they're somehow canon, like because they're not, like, this isn't canon. Nothing that happens in Project Horizons affects the main story. It simply can't because of the way it was written. So, like, going back and retconning all this stuff doesn't matter. It has no value. Fucking, of course we still have time for a memory orb somehow.
Alright.
BJ connects to Lacuna, and Lacuna, Lacuna is more orb than horse, gets dropped into a convenient memory orb that does not matter. It's a conversation between Golden Blood and Rarity, because of course it is. That, like, really facilitates the, like, weird vibe that PH has. And I was talking this with a friend about how, like, the story goes so out of its way to, like, make no one at fault for anything that has ever happened. Because, like, one of the core defining features of Rarity in the original story is that she became really insular and weird because she started reading the Black Book, because she collects seditious material, because that's one of the things the Ministry of Image does. And the Black Book is the Necronomicon from Lovecraftian myth, and it talks to her because it's got the soul of a crazed zebra in it. So she started becoming insular and weird and being convinced that, like, soul magic could fix the apocalypse, or, like, could fix the war in some way. And she alienated her friends entirely, but for some reason this goes out of its way to be like, no, actually Rarity was still friends with everybody, and, like, you totally got, like, Twilight's help to work on the book, and it's like, that's just not what happened, and, like, really kills the, like, theming you were going, like, the original story was going for. And also Golden Blood is just there to be like, hey, yeah, I made some mistakes, I need to fix my mistakes with other mistakes, and, like, everything's getting worse.
It turns out everything revolved around me!
Yes, me, Golden Blood. Me, Samba's OC. Do not steal. And there's also just one last line that a friend pointed out that, like, it's also really weird that Rarity is, like, even more hetero in this scene, where she's just like, you know, none of this was supposed to happen. I was supposed to, like, have a husband and everything. And it's like, the original story made Rarity gay. Like, did you forget that? Like I say this every once in a while, but, like, did you forget that Rarity's dying words were a confession to Fluttershy? Like, did you forget that? Do you forget that one of the most pivotal, important scenes, the entire goddamn thing, involved Rarity confessing to Fluttershy?
I'm sure it stands out in Sombra's mind. He's fixing it.
Yeah, I'm sure it stands.
As a queer ally.
I'm sure it sticks out in his mind. He's grinding his teeth the entire time. Because both Rarity and Fluttershy get shacked up with dudes. Even though, like, nothing comes of Rarities, but everything comes from Fluttershy's, because fucking whatever. Fuck. And Christ, so much of this is just Rarity, the BJ talking in her brain. There's a scene in which, like, Lacuna is, like, arguing with the goddess, which is just really nonsensical coming across. Like, it just, so much of this is to reinforce that, like, the goddess is a weak-ass bitch that no one should care about. But the way it reads to me is that Sombra just, like, doesn't get the first thing about how the goddess was presented. Like, I've talked about this before, but one of the big wrong things that Sombra really gets about the goddess is that the goddess isn't, it isn't a round table. Like, it isn't like Trixie and Twilight and the other two, Gestalt and Mosaic, like, arguing with each other all the time. And it certainly isn't the case that Trixie is, like, the bad guy. Like, she isn't the devil, and Twilight isn't her conscience. Like, that's not how it, like, that wouldn't make sense in this setting, because, like, for a lot of reasons, but the main one being the fact that, like, Twilight was a war criminal. Like, she invented atrocitous technology and was, like, very, very, like, very cruel in the setting. And that mixed with Trixie's megalomaniacal, like, narcissistic personality is part of what created the goddess as she is. But this story goes of its way to say that no, that was actually because the Psalm was, like, was a corrupting force, because she was the original raider for some reason. But just because of all that, like, the goddess just doesn't make any sense of the story, and it's a complete, like, misnomer. But there's a bit in it where she's basically, like, throws a hissy fit about Lacuna, like, and BJ. Like, there's kind of a thing of talking about, like, BJ's, like, BJ won't kill little Pip even if you try to make her do it. And, like, the goddess just exerts her will to just show off, I guess. And she, this scene would be interesting if I like gave a shit at all, and it didn't come across as like hilarious irony, but she like removes all of Blackjack's like emotions. Like she removes basically all her limiters. Like she makes her like guts all the like parts of her that cares about like people at all. And she just becomes like a pure sociopath. But like, because Sombra is a hack writer, it's not really framed like that. It's framed more like the goddess is assuming direct control. Even though the goddess is primarily Trixie, who was like the great and powerful Oz, basically, in this setting, especially. Like a big megalomaniacal narcissist, always talked in the third person. For some reason, in Blackjack, Blackjack is really uber robotic for some reason, and refers to Lacuna as the aberrant, which is a word that not even the goddess uses. Like it just it comes across like not making any sense at all. Like it just none of this makes any sense. But this scene would also be kind of cool if we could trade perspectives, because you know BJ starts fighting Lacuna because like I guess the goddess is just sick of Lacuna existing and doesn't care about killing her, even though even though none of this makes any sense, because the goddess, since they're no longer in the hoof, Lacuna doesn't have the enervation protection to stop the goddess from controlling her every movement. So if the goddess really wanted to get rid of Lacuna, she would just put a gun to her head and blow her brains out. Like there would be there would be no fight. But because this has to happen, or because like there's a set piece that Sombra wants to do, this fight still happens even though it makes no sense. So like Lacuna fights a bunch of Alicorns and a like limiter removed Blackjack, which would be really really cool if the scene wasn't stupid. Like that's just the thing that sticks out to me. Like it doesn't make any sense how it's happening, and on top of that, Blackjack being so wooden and robotic like doesn't make any sense with any of the actors participating in the scene. And because this is a first person perspective narrative, we kind of like the writing just doesn't work very well. Like a lot of like the action prose just doesn't really translate super well. BJ like manages to like get kind of snapped out of it because it's like this weird thing where it's weird. Like I have memories of this scene originally going down, and I feel like it was written differently because I remember it being written in a way that Lacuna beats Blackjack because a Blackjack without any moral guidance is somehow weaker, even though that makes no sense within the way that the story has always been themed. Like, the story has always been themed that, like, Blackjack is the greatest killer in the world. Like, she is the virtuoso of murder, and her having, like, all her inhibitions and all her removed would just make her stronger, but, like, whatever. But the way I'm reading it in the chapter now, it's BJ gets like control back, I guess. Like it's very hard to understand what's actually happening here. Like I'm very confused on what's going on. But she basically gives an ultimatum to the goddess, and by like telekinetically putting a gun to her head and to Lacuna's head, and is like, you know, like either you heal us or I'm going to use the only amount of control I have to blow both our brains out, and you'll lose your trump card. And because we've been told that she really needs the BJ for no good reason, she complies with this. This whole scene is ridiculous. Like it's just.
I'm so frustrated. Like, yeah, I don't know. I'm frustrated because the only commentary I have is like, well, I could have done, but like for one thing, like, what if this chapter was in the third person to really establish like how disconnected BJ is from herself? And like she's adrift in this whirlpool of unity of other people's perspectives, and so because she's being observed by other eyes that are also her own, like you can use literary technique to like create that kind of dissonance by like telling this chapter in the third person. Mm-hmm. And then we can establish like when BJ is and isn't control from like when the text like shifts back into first person. Another thing, this chapter, I think, most suffers from Somber's complete crippling inability to allow any other character agency. Because this could be, like, he, like, shot himself in the dick in, like, the first few words by, like, Kuna could never, ever, get real, like, leverage or power in the situation, agency of any kind. Instead of giving Blackjack the ability to, like, leverage something she doesn't have, you could send Lacuna off here with a big heroic self-sacrifice of she threatens herself, the goddess, like, tries to bluff and says, like, I could end to disperse you at any moment, and you could either have a cool moment where, like, Lacuna goes, I double dog dare you, and the goddess keeps not doing it. or where she says, oh, then I'll do it myself. And you could hearken back to any number of sci-fi properties through the year. Like, you could hearken back to, like, sort of the last moments of Kosh and Babylon 5. You could do a whole interesting thing. Like, you could do a Madoka box thing. Like, there's been a bunch of... If you're going to reference anime, Somber, there's a recurring theme in a lot of anime of, like, the hero is brainwashed, and rather than, like, being taken control of directly, the villains just selectively alter a handful of memories to, like, fundamentally make their personality such that their new personality is in line
is more
with
compliant,
the needs of the
yeah.
bad guys.
Yeah,
do a thing where, like, Lacuna, like, steps into BJ's memories and, like, has a battle over those memories, and
so
the thing
I'll say is that none of that can happen because this whole thing is for, like, this is really very, very, like, I cannot stress this enough. The goddess is not Somber's character, and for all of Somber's hacky failings, Somber is still beholden to, like, the unspoken rule of fan fiction that, like, you can't truly alter the original story because people won't like it. Like, people will just hate it, and, like, that's the reason why it's an unspoken.
And yet
call.
He has, like,
he's willing to
step on that third rail when it comes to queer erasure, but he can't fundamentally.
Well, no one gives a shit about queer characters. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
people. The only thing nerds care about is, like, consistency. They care that, like, things are canon or not.
He can dick with the margins.
Yes, but he can't, like, truly change the character, and because of that, he is impotently incapable of making this story interesting. Like, this scene cannot be interesting because the goddess can't just be like, because he can't just like, because like the thing you want of like Lacuna being like, lol, whatever, I die free, blowing your brains out, and just her emotional, like, the lockbox of like the Pandora's box of emotions just rushing through the goddess and just destroying her from the inside. Like, that can't happen because that's not how it happens in the original story. That's not how they beat the goddess. So this entire scene is pointless. This entire chapter is pointless. Like, it's just shitty fan service. And
that's precisely why I was like, I it somehow slipped my mind at the beginning of the episode, but that's the main reason why I felt super indifferent to this chapter.
Yeah.
Coming. Like, I like, oh, I, okay, we're interacting with the,
like,
main,
like,
text again, which means this is a weird diversion. Like, this, like, no, whatever happens, it will, it must end in a null. It must end in nothing. Like, it can't result in anything.
Yeah, the only thing that could happen is, like, pissy snipes at, like, oh, I don't think the story should have gone that way, and here's how it would be better, but, like, written in the text. That's kind of what we're getting here. But yeah, she's all Lacuna. Lacuna fucks her up. Pulls a dumb Hail Mary to try and go for a double suicide. But yeah, instead we're still gonna go kill the Lightbringer, kill Little Pip.
Madoka box, kill the kill. I'm trying to think of all the anime off the top of my head, where there's interesting psychic battles for the soul of the protagonist.
Yeah. BJ gets handed a magic special super bullet that, like... So, like, premise-wise, it's interesting, but again, because this chapter is stupid and pointless, it doesn't matter. She's handed a sniper round that's magically enchanted with a bypass spell. So it can, like... It passes through any material when it's fired that isn't flesh. Because BJ isn't in the final dungeon, like isn't in Mariposa, which is the final dungeon that Little Pip is in when she's confronting the goddess. She can't be in there. So the only way that it can work is she's handed a sniper rifle. It's an anti-material rifle with a bullet that can shoot through an entire complex dungeon. Yeah. Which would be really cool, except for none of this matters, so who gives a shit? And it's also really utilitarian. Like, it's only that way because BJ doesn't show up in the original story, so she can't, like, it would be violating the unspoken rule to do this. Everything after this scene, though, is entirely non-canon. Just the way that, the way that Somber thinks the, or at least redacts the way the goddess and Little Pip's final confrontation goes down is just completely made-up garbage. None of this matters. This extra double doesn't matter. I asked a friend to compare notes on, because they had read the ending recently, more recently than I have, on how non-canon this is, and basically every single thing is nonsense. But we also get a dumb, stupid line that doesn't make any sense because a lot of the plan that Little Pip Little Pip's plan to defeat the goddess is super convoluted. It involves but it makes sense at the time because the goddess can read minds. So Little Pip does this whole plan of using memory orbs to erase her memory and set up a bunch of planned stuff that would happen without her knowing about it. And the whole linchpin of it is she has a memory orb on her that the goddess couldn't help but use because it's it was a Twilight Sparkle specific memory orb. It was branded and everything. So the goddess couldn't help but look at it, and it was she was being shown all the past memories of all of her friends, and the original story of Friendship is Magic happens, or Friendship Conquers Villains, and it distracts the goddess long enough that they can secure a nuke under her using Zenith, who's a zebra who can stealth, and also the goddess can't read zebra minds because the magic just doesn't work on zebras. And the only reason why I'm bringing up all of this is because Somber goes out of his way to make this make so much less sense. The goddess also teams up with a bunch of enclavers, and a bunch of enclave characters show up. The goddess figures out about the nuke, which didn't happen in the original story, really. And she scrambles Blackjack and Lacuna to try and find it. And there's also a really weird specific line that's given where Lacuna... Because Lacuna is apparently full... She is a full-up tank. She's too full of bad memories now, and apparently that's why Blackjack needs to be used as one, as the new receptacle. And the reason why that's even brought up is because, for some reason, Somber thinks that he needs to make Lacuna still the linchpin of all this, because when
an entirely disposable linchpin.
Well, it's what I mean about that is
Non-load-bearing cornerstone.
Let me finish. Little Pip does her whole plan of showing, the goddess all of her past memories and making her realize, oh God, what have I done? I've become a monster. Moment, but we get this little bit of dialogue that's oh yeah. Also, the only reason why this is happening is because Lacuna is still too full of memories, so the goddess can't throw it in the recycling bin, which just didn't need to happen. We didn't need that line. It's just weirdly just trying to make pH more important than it is.
It's also the funny of the because story. it makes Lacuna important without giving her any agency.
Sorry, you're cutting out super bad. What was that?
It makes Lacuna important without giving her any agency.
Yeah.
She had no, like, part in it. It just is, it's,
she was just it doing is, her job. It's actually
a failing on her, like she this succeeds because Lacuna was insufficient. Because of her weakness, this goes off. Not because she refused.
Not because she did anything, like, yeah. There's a really weird scene where, like, the goddess is, like... Like, again, the goddess is, like, just completely out of character in all of this shit. Is just presented as, like, just a weird Gestalt nightmare that just makes no sense. But, yeah, the whole finding of the nuke takes forever. There's so much fighting about it. There's a setup for this scene that's about to happen where like just before BJ figures out that it's a nuke that's happening, she's like, oh, you know, she really idolizes little Pip because like she idolizes the Stable Dweller. She's like, oh, Stable Dweller has some cool plan that's gonna kill the goddess. And to set up this is like she's like, oh, she's gonna kill her, but there's all these Enclave here, and there's also all these Hellhounds here. Like, what is she going to do about them? Is she going to, like, evacuate them before her plan goes off? And then, like, the whole nuke plant... Like, this is important. That's why I'm bringing it up. They go through this whole thing of fire, like, trying to find the nuke, and they can't stop it before it goes off. And so, like... Lacuna's like, you know, save yourself. I'll teleport you away. And there's like, no, we don't have time. So like, they're like there when the nuke goes off, which I like. Despite how stupid every goddamn thing about how getting to this scene is, like there's a bit where basically Lacuna just like, you know, throws Blackjack behind her. Throws up like a strongest magical wall she can because she's so close to the radiation, she's a lot stronger than she should be, and then just eats an entire nuke at point blank range, which like as stupid as every goddamn thing getting up to it, the imagery of just like of BJ just like standing in this little hollow pocket where nuclear fire in every direction is just melting everything is super fucking cool. Like it is the only part of this set piece I like. It's the one thing about this chapter I think is cool, and even then it's still tainted by being how stupid it is. Like the fact that like Blackjack was there for no good reason is really silly. Like it's peak fan fiction, right? Like the worst kind of fan fiction is just like, oh, all these things are happening, and also my self-insert character is just there while it happens. Like, just a recitation of already previously established events, but also, like, your OC is just there to, like, also give their, like, opinion.
Maximal fanfic.
Yes. Blackjack was there while Little Pit was in a bunker surviving the nuke happening. BJ was just there getting blasted.
Standing on it! But that's like, just how much more Chad she is compared like the to the virgin original story protag.
The only reason why I dig this is because it's Lacuna doing this. Like, it's not... It isn't just like Blackjack's like, because I'm mostly cyber zombie, I'm just immune to this for no good reason. It's just... It's... Lacuna is just does like a, like, you know, stopgap, just like plants a tower shield into the ground and eats an entire firewall. Like, it's just a cool image, but, yeah, the smoke billows, we transition to next scene after everything's melted. There is we get the core beating heart of this shitty fucking fanfic in, like, a single or two paragraphs of dialogue, or I guess monologue from Blackjack. I've been saying dialogue a lot today, and I don't mean it, where Blackjack looks around at all the devastation around her, and she's like, this is kind of a bad thing that Little Pip did. she killed, like, I might have killed Stable 99, but little Kit Pip, she killed thousands of people. That's super bad. She's like a mass murderer or something. And the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because this is a very, very common argument chuds make about Little Pip, about this story. Because it's important to remember, Hellhounds is a little bit more of a gray area because Hellhounds are, like, kind of badly written in the original story. They're just Deathclaws, so they have no personality or identity until, like, the last minute where they suddenly do. So there's, like, it's a little bit more of a gray area, but the Enclave are Nazis. Like, the thousands of people that she nuked out of the sky are a bunch of sky Nazis. But because Sombra is such a shitty
little... Also, what were the Huftwaffen doing there?
They're teaming up with a goddess to take over the wasteland.
Whoops!
So, yeah.
So, they needed to be solved anyway! Like, they are an invading hostile force. There to do evil. For bad reasons. this would be morally okay if she, like, on the battlefield, like, systematically sniped them. Like shot them, like, from a trench with a Gatlin. Like, would that make it less, well, like, bad? They're an invading force!
I mean, the core thesis of this setting, of this story, is that people that shoot at you, like people who try to fight you, deserve to die. But people who had no ability to fight back, that's evil. So a nuclear weapon going off, which, like, admittedly, nuclear weapon going off is in itself is a pretty heinous thing to do, but there is a very specific narrative within the FOE community about Little Pip is a mass murderer because she does a bunch of shit in the setting that is in a really dumb person's brain morally unjustified. Like, she kills a town full of cannibals, and a lot of people have really specific feelings about that. That's all chuddy. It's all bullshit. And in this case, too, with the nuke thing going off, it's all bullshit. A lot of people go, like, well, those Enclave people had families, and it's like, yeah, they were also Nazis. Like, I don't want to tell you, like, they were sky fascists. They harbored, like, a totalitarian fascist state. Like, they're not, like, free of sin. Did you forget the part where they just wiped out the Griffins because they needed their resources? Like, did you forget that? Like, I guess you did, because, like, you're a Nazi. Like, you're either a fascist chud or you're a sympathizer. Like, the Hellhounds, I will admit, is a lot harder to forgive, because it's their ancestral home they refuse to leave from, and that's why they got mutated. But also, like, their Deathclaws, it's really weird. Like, the story kind of does a bad job of, like a people, and makes them more just a thing that kills people, because that's just what they are. It tries to do the thing from Fallout 2 where there's a bunch of talking Deathclaws, and it just doesn't do it very well in my mind. So I don't really have that much, I don't really care that much about them getting wiped out in the story, because it's not really framed very well in the first place. But
there's comedy gold. Your rapist slaver, your mass murdering rapist slaver is casting moral judgment on this desperate use of a nuke to wipe out a swarm of Nazis guarding a demon god.
Yeah, the wasteland's greatest monster, yeah. Who, it's important to remember, the goddess effectively wanted to genocide all races, because in her mind, the only race that deserves to live is the Alicorns, and a very small percentage of people can be turned into Alicorns, and everybody else just deserves to die as far as the goddess is concerned. But yeah, she eats a nuke. I just think it's really silly that it's just like, wow, Little Pip really was the bigger killer of the two of us. Like, it really feels like, it really feels like BJ is swiveling to the audience and going, like, you see, I'm not nearly as bad as killer because I don't have as high of a body count.
Jesus.
Because that's the way people actually think about this. That's actually how people feel about Blackjack versus Little Pip, is that, like...
Inhuman.
Little Pip is an unforgivable monster because she killed a bunch of cannibals that fed people to their own children. and Chica blew up a bunch of Nazis, and BJ is a saint because she's, like, morally conflicted, despite, you know, being a monarchist and helping Nazis on multiple occasions and doing all sorts of other evil shit, killing tons of children, being a rapist multiple times in the story.
Man, well, these people aren't well. Like, they're like, man, fuck. Don't drink anything Somber hands you.
Yes. You're going to want to move a little away from the mic. Yeah, we're getting close to the end, though. So BJ finds Lacuna, and because, like, Alicorns, our size is dependent on their exposure to radiation, Lacuna is now a really large horse. She has gone from being large horse to largest horse.
You'd think, like, norm, like, these rules, of course, don't apply to Samba. He's such an innovator. But normal story logic would demand that, like, safeguarding a friend against the brunt of a nuclear explosion, like, the cost would be, like, she would have, like, partially mummified.
From, we're getting,
like,
there.
The calories in her own body. Like,
we're getting there because there are a very, very specific thing needs to happen. And that's what we're getting. So Lacuna is like, hey, we saved the day, but the goddess is dead now, and now, like, you know, everyone's getting their memories back. And BJ's like, what does that mean? It's like, it means I have to go back to my home planet now. Like, it means that, like, because, like, I'm all of the emotions that the goddess has been gutting from people for decades, that all needs to go back into their regular bodies, so I have to die now. And I remember being, like, really affected by this scene the first time through, because, like, this is, like, the only character I had really liked up to, the, like, anymore at this point. And I think it's less that I like Lacuna, and this is more, like, this is the, like, last, like, this is the loss of, like, quality in the story, because the story gets precipitably dumber after this. Because Lacuna, despite all of her faults, was really, like, the heart of the crew. Like, she doesn't say anything terribly important most of the time, except for, like, things that are just nice to say to people. Whatever, she was the heart of the crew, so her dying, like, as she's about to now, doesn't, like, really, like, guts a lot of the, like, emotional connection I had to the story. But she's like, sorry, I gotta die now. So I have to explain a thing that happens in the original story really quick. So there is a part in, after the goddess is dead, and Little Pip gets out of a little, like, blast shelter that was in the Mariposa base. Little Pip is with a character named Ditsy Doo, and a giant Alicorn shows up, who's, like, jet black. But I think she has, like, Twilight Sparkle's cutie mark or something like that on her, or she's, like, purple. I can't remember the exact details of it, but she, like, confers something about her that makes her seem like she's Twilight Sparkle to Little Pip, and Little Pip, like, takes the opportunity to, like, tell her that, like, something really important about one of her friends, because, like Twilight Sparkle, like, where a lot of the story all went wrong in the original story is that, like, Little Pip and Pinkie Pie stopped being friends because Pinkie Pie became a drug addict, and then she stopped being a drug addict just before she died, and, like, wanted to tell Twilight Sparkle she was so sorry about everything. And that was, like, her dying regrets. So, like, Little Pip tries to convert that to Twilight Sparkle horse in a suit, like, and hopes that that confers to Twilight Sparkle in some way before she passes on. Which is a really sentimental moment, and even now I'm still kind of, like, affected by it, thinking about it now. But because Somber is such a fucking hack, he pulled a Wikipedia, and went, like, where did that Alicorn come from? Because it's just a random Alicorn. It seems really, really... There seems like a big plot hole that we never could explain who that is. And today I can tell you, 53 episodes into the podcast, Lacuna was that Alicorn. The entirety...
triumphal trumpets, except that they're farts. Just...
Oh, we'll get to that later. But... The entirety of Lacuna's arc exists to explain, like,
That one scene. to just really strip the sentiment out of it. Just really completely miss the point of, like, the importance of mystery and, like...
Yeah, really guts a lot of the emotional heart out of it. I'm laughing because it's just it's incredible to think about.
Yeah,
so good.
You know, this was a pretty good episode for us.
I'm not done yet.
Important for us. Oh,
I'm not done
yet. All right.
We got two scenes left. So BJ
gotta give Summer the opportunity to spoil this for me.
Yeah, BJ limps home sadly. Thinking about how sad she is about her friend dying. And, like, you know, because, like, the Hellhounds live through, like, this nuking happening, I guess, a bunch of them show up and, like, fight BJ, and BJ is forced to murder them, and she's, like, crying the whole time. She's like, don't make me do this! which just, like, really neuters the whole complaint that Somber just made with Blackjack about, like, wow, she murdered all those defenseless Hellhounds. I'm sorry, I have to kill you. It's just like, what the fuck? Way to undercut your own point, you moron. But, like, all hope is lost as, like, Deathclaws / Hellhounds descend upon her. And then her friends show up, I guess, and they all save her. Because they figured out that she had where she had went. Specifically because of Lancer, the fucking zebra that they had that BJ kidnapped through the power of boners. He's helping them now because in Rampage, Lampage shades this: every time BJ beats somebody, they immediately become her friend. So Lancer is part of the crew now, even though he killed a bunch of people in cold blood.
Cuckoo
or whatever.
Who earns that shit? I just have to interrupt with that. Like, this is so stupid. This is like, that's, what kind of fucking baby brain do you have to, like, not get the context of that meme? Yes, it's a meme that every anime protagonist, like, will, like, can or will inevitably befriend most of their, like, at least early villain roster. But it's earned. Like, stuff happens between point A and point B. Like, it's...
Yeah, Vegeta goes through a whole
arc. It's not
a
strict mechanism.
Yeah. Beating it up doesn't switch from evil to good in them. Yeah, they got the dumb... They have a blimp now. They got their airship. And they put BJ on it. The only thing I thought was that I liked about this entire thing is that Boo, who is their pet horse friend, who's been in the story this entire time up to now, like
wait,
I just I never bring her up. Like, Boo is always with the party, like the white, the albino horse that, like, is basically, like, that's the brain of a dog. If BJ is with the party, Boo is there every single time, at all times. She just doesn't do anything, so I never bring her up. But the only thing I thought was kind of cute is that she's wearing a little cap and hat, and she's, like, chewing on the steering wheel when they're talking to her. And I just thought that was cute, and I wanted to bring that up.
All right.
But...
good to note that thing is still present as is.
But just to, like, really twist the knife, like, this scene is fucking hilarious for multiple reasons, but, you know, it's all them convening over the death of their friend, which, like, I didn't really think that, like, a lot of the crew really cared about Lacuna that much, so this comes across really odd. Just to really, like, shoot any characterization Rampage might have, she throws a fucking temper tantrum about the fact that she didn't get to die. Like, she's like, oh, you were next to a nuclear weapon and you didn't invite me. Like, but it's not as a joke. Like, she's genuinely mad that, like, BJ was in a position of, like, total oblivion and Rampage could have been there. And, like, that's somehow, like, a bad thing that she didn't get to die. And that's fucking ridiculous to me. Like, it's like, okay, cool. I guess no character has any growth at all. Thanks, Somber. But the scene, one of the things that really earmarks the scene, like I couldn't remember the exact details of it, but there's a bunch of hilarious bits in it. Fucking, they quote the goddamn tears in a rain in the rain speech from fucking Blade Runner. There's a link to a YouTube sampling of music that is in the PDF still, and it is aged hilariously because it's the like meme sad violin music that people use in montage videos all the time. Like, it's going to be linked in the show notes, but it's sad violin music plays like on the radio to like really sell how sad this scene is supposed to be. That's the thing, like, I like Lacuna, and I think this scene is ultra saccharine. God, it's just fuck. But yeah, so that's how we end our. There's one last detail that I really wanted to screw in on just before we fly off into the sunset. Is that because BJ and Glory hadn't had very much of a talk, like, you know, because BJ, Glory, and 21 all had a threesome together, and Glory's been having a lot of problems with her sexuality recently. They bring it up, and it's infuriating to me. Because she's like, oh, I guess she's like, well, I guess, like, she's uncomfortable. Like, well, I liked it more than I thought I would. And, like, BJ makes the meme of bisexuality for the win, which I forgot was a meme until this moment. But, as a queer person myself, I find this really frustrating that, like, Glory has a one-night stand, and because Somber is a moron with a baby brain, like, the smoothest brain take on sexuality is that individual acts of sex forever determine your sexuality, which just isn't true. Mm-hmm. Like there is, you know, like, literally any person who's gay will tell you, like, no, that's just not how it works. So I just really wanted to point that out. Like, noted ally Somber doesn't understand the first thing about sexuality at all, and thinks that just, like, well, lesbians are only lesbians if they only have sex with women. So whatever. I just really, really hate this plot point.
My stomach is churning.
But yeah,
that's fun. At least I feel too sick to like lash out violently. For the past few sentences, I've wanted to punch a hole in this drywall over here, but now I just feel real sick.
Yeah, that's the end of our chapter, though. So, is there anything better we could be?
You know,
reading?
Something better we could you could be listening to is a podcast called Writing Excuses, and I bring that up because it really stuck out in my mind with the like sort of left field Rampage gets real mad that she could have been eradicated in a nuclear explosion. I'm reminded of an episode where they talked about sort of character-specific humor, that, like, you have some sort of core personality trait, and at some point in on your project, you can get a solid laugh line by, like, demonstrating, like, the character's quirks to a knowing audience. And I couldn't help but think how bad this is an example of that. And just generally, like, highlighting how poorly written Rampage is overall. Like, if Rampage had an ongoing side quest of, yeah, in the last 200 years, I have yet to find an active nuke. Like, a nuke that was likely or primed to go off. It's really my one wish in life. To, like, finally find one and let it off directly in my own face. Because I'm pretty sure I can't come back from that one. And yet, like, she's encountered at least one over the course of our knowing her in the story. There's the Tower of Terror that was gonna go off. Like,
yeah. If she wanted to die so bad at this point, why didn't she just, like, stay around
there?
Yeah, when the High Tower exploded.
Yeah, so the thing that you interrupted me with more story was, I was about to say, we needed this one. This was so dumb and empty. Like, we've had a few good laughs, and it was all just a vomit. Like, it was all, like, but, like, that last few events really kind of took the wind out of my sails. Now I feel gross, and I have to go take a shower. That being said, you can contact us. Ding, 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 ding. Wait, what's that? Oh, it's Jingles the mailbag bot. Hey, Jingles, what do you got for us?
Oh, man. Good old Jingles.
Jingles has something from us from somebody who's signed as Quinn. A question. After finishing Project Horizons, would you guys consider reviewing the sequels, Homelands and Speak? Also, what songs have you used in the intros? They're very catchy, and I'd enjoy listening to them in their entirety.
Oh, well. Hello. Thanks. Thanks, Quinn. I guess that's mostly going to be me feeling these. I'll get to the music one first. I guess I'll do these backwards. The music is all like, it's all like 20s era.
Public domain.
Yeah, public domain. Jazz. It's like I found a site that catalogs like old, like direct phonograph recording. That'll have to like source a bunch of my music. I probably won't be able to find it all, unfortunately, just because of the way that it's like record, like the it's documented is hard to track. But I can certainly try. It'll probably be in the show notes at least this chapter or the next one. But to answer the other question, will we be tackling the sequels? We've talked about this multiple times about what we're going to be doing after this. The definite plan for anything we do after this is like that we know for sure is we're going to be doing a Dominic Deegan webcomic review podcast. Dominic Deegan being a similarly like shitty author in different ways, so it's kind of a similar theme. But we will still be
at
sticking
least
to
he's
this.
Like grotesquely wholesome. Like he's much more of a lib in his grossness.
Yeah, he's not really a monster. Just more of like a, just a bad writer. But that's going to be
he's
sort of
pretty
like,
bad. Like he's got some like
yeah
real...
he's got some bad shit. But it's nowhere near like I have a rape fetish and needs to be included in everything that I write. Like Somber does.
He's definitely not. I have a desperate need to make excuses for Nazis and slavery. But there's some real shitty.
But that'll probably be an addition.
Para conservative lib takes.
Yeah, that'll probably be in addition to. Still continuing to do this podcast, like that'll be in addition to whatever we do with the fanfic podcast, and like the going plan is that I think like we're just expressed being pretty like burnt on Somber specifically. So if we do the sequels, it won't be right away. We might do the original story. We might do another side story. Like there's a couple of shorter ones that we worth be doing maybe. Yes,
we got a long way to go, and I have no idea how I'm gonna feel. About doing any more with Somber at this exact moment, like we're getting hit pretty hard. Like,
yeah,
with it, so.
To touch on them individually, though, I also wanted to bring up the fact that both of them are not finished. That is also a big barrier to it. Around here, we like to like do like finished works because it's hard to do a written work that isn't finished because. Things may change or be addressed or recontextualized by later additions to a piece of work, especially in a Calvin Ball style story. It's also important to remember that Speak is not written by Somber directly. It's only overviewed by Somber, as far as I remember.
Executive producer, Somber.
Yes. And Homelands might never be finished. What I've heard on the grapevine is that Homelands is kind of on a sort of like de facto hiatus because Somber has some sort of actual writing job now, so the likelihood of actually like doing that sequel and finishing it might never happen. So that's kind of one of the other big hurdles. Like even if it's just that, like even if we were like ready to go, like we were just jazzed up, coked out on our brains, like ready to go, like go in round two, like it may never happen because it's just hard to do stories that are ongoing. It's hard to make like a podcast about something like that. So that's, I guess, covering thing like that. Like I said, the more likely thing would be we're probably going to be taking a break from Somber at the very least and doing something like either the original story or like tackling Heroes or Murky Number 7 or doing some of the shorter ones, like maybe doing like Guys of Chaos, Puppy Smiles. Sorry, that's called Pink Eyes or something like that. But yeah, hopefully that answers your questions. Thanks for writing in. And if you want to get your questions answered, where can they go to write to us?
You can email us directly at weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. Like this week's champion, grand champion, hero of the mailbag, Quinn. I bet none of you, the rest of you, have the strength and fortitude, guile and clarity of virtue that Quinn had. But in the event that you do, if you can somehow prove me wrong, you can email us at weirdingtonesq@gmail.com.
You can also check us out at thouartfi. My Twitter is extremely not safe for work, so keep that in mind. Weirdington's is at Weirdington. Is it E?
Yeah. Weirdington E.
Yeah. Your Gmail and your Twitter is very similar, so it's hard to remember.
Well, they're supposed to be completely identical, but for whatever reason, Twitter didn't have the character space for the SQ. Or some other Weirdington Esquire is out there. My Twitter is I go out of my way to not heart any not safe for work things or post not safe for work things, and I think I've managed to retweet. I have a better balance of art tutorials, cute things, and outraged political hot takes. But yeah, thank you for coming. Man, I have no idea what to expect to come. Oh wait, we're going to Hooftwaffen HQ.
Thunderhead 2020. There.
Oh no, Fi, I'm pretty sure this has definitely all been some sort of terrible mistake.